Here we are in Siman Sadihei, which began with the core sugya of Naparnat, the core sugya of Dagum Shalom Bekaira, and moved from there to an application that the Rishonim debated, Rabbeinu Baruch and Rabban, and subsequently debated. So how does Naparnat play out in the world of washing dishes? So we had a chance to think about that carefully over the course of Siv Gimel, Siman Sadihei Siv Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, as we were just talking about before. The sugya of washing dishes brought to the fore not only the issues of Naparnat, but also issues of Ben Yom versus Ein Ben Yom, and Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni, and a very unique, as we saw the other week, a very unique din of Iruy Kli Rishon. The way it plays out specifically when you're dealing with kalim that are stacked as opposed to actual food, and now we come to even the closing topic in the Ramah of Gimel had been the question of what do you have to assume, and the Reis Alochazin LaMachazginah, just because there may or may not have been a problem, if there isn't evidence to indicate this problem, you can leave things as they are. So that was a very, very rich Sif Gimel. And Siv Dalet, we're at right now, is going to be the other half, the other Sif, about washing dishes, and it raises a new issue, a new variable, that a lot of machlok is on the page, and it has some intriguing practical ramifications. And intriguing even just the opening phrase, Yeirah Eli. Shulchan Aruch says, it would seem to me, that's a phrase that Shulchan Aruch very often quotes the language of the Rambam. It could be the Rambam is a Rishon that he quotes verbatim more than any other. He quotes plenty of Rashba verbatim. Also, the Rambam probably is the single most quoted Rishon by the Shulchan Aruch in terms of the actual language. And that turn of phrase is one that the Rambam uses as well. Rambam wrote a compendium of all of Halacha. And almost every single sentence, and there are tens and hundreds of thousands of sentences in Rambam's Mishnah Torah, almost every single sentence is the Rambam quoting some line from Chazal. A Mishnah Tosefta, Bavli Yerushalmi, Midrash Halacha, something. Rambam writes, everything I say I'm quoting, unless I say it would seem to me. Every once in a long while, the Rambam will say Yerali. Shechter quotes a thing from Professor Asaf. I think it appears 99 times. Entire Mishnah Torah, where the Rambam says Yerali, which is a staggeringly tiny percentage. Think about the sheer quantity of dinim, the number of sentences in the Mishnah Torah, only 99 of them. It's a tiny fraction of 1%. He's almost always quoting earlier Makaros. But when he says his own Chiddush, he'll say Yerali. It's very rare to see in the Shulchan Aruch as well. I don't know if it's more or less rare than the Rambam, they're pretty rare. Part of what this means, as Nosek can point out, is if you look in the Beis Yosef, you're not going to find this. He's not, almost invariably, as we've seen, Shulchan Aruch is Rabbi Yosef Karo's closing sentence, closing summation halacha of the whole paragraph, the whole conversation that he had quoted in the Beis Yosef. But here, this does not appear in the Beis Yosef. Rabbi Shulchan Aruch is saying, it would seem to me the following. The following scenario is mutter. Let's remember where the Shulchan, we had seen a lot of Ramah in Siv Gimel. Obviously, Shulchan Aruch is not continuing from the Ramah, it's continuing from what he wrote in Siv Gimel. What he had written in Siv Gimel is you have the fleshik dishes that you're cleaning in a boiling hot milchik pot full of water. So if it's Yatzel lettuce, they're both B'nai Yomon, he had said, Shulchan Aruch said, it's fine. It's fine. He was Mekel against Reina Baruch. It's fine, unless the plates are sticky. The plates have residue on them. If it's a big milchik cauldron, clean milchik cauldron full of water and fleshik pot with fleshik residue, shuman davuk ben, so then that's a concern. You have fleshik grease or pieces of meat floating around in the milchik pot. That's a concern. He said, then you're going to have to figure out if you have shishim in the pot in the water to be mevatel the meat. Now the Shulchan Aruch continues. Another way to matter that scenario, to have a big milchik cauldron with fleshik plates and fleshik grease floating around in the boiling hot water. How else could that be mutter other than beetle? Yeroy Ali, Shulchan Aruch says in Siddalot, She'im nasnu efer b'mayim chamin shabiyore. If you had put ashes into the hot water in the big milchal cauldron, kodim she'nichwa kederes besocha, before you put the greasy, dirty, fleshic things in, there was already ashes in the water. Afa pisha shum and davuk ben, even though you put in those fleshic pots and pans or plates and they're dirty, still mutter. Why? The idei ha'efer who knows in tam l'tam. Because there's ashes in the water, so whatever flavor the fleshic residue will impart to the milk pot, it's a nosen tam lufgam. It's a net negative. The flavor is gonna taste the fleshic flavor going into the milk pot will be a terrible tasting fleshic flavor because after all it's mixed with the ashes. So then everything remains kosher. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. It says the Rishonim say, Bayit Tosfos say, again based on the Gemara, that the bittul b'shishim works, and Yerali also that even without bittul b'shishim, if the water is already pogum, you put ashes in, we would say put detergent in, so then there's no concern. Then there's no.
How does that translate into a sink?
Okay, so let's figure that out. So first let's figure out how this translates, but first let's figure out what's he saying and is it correct? Shulchan Aruch is saying this as a rightly. The Shach and the Taz are not going to let him. And they're not taking it sitting down. They're not taking it sitting down. The Shach and the Taz both. The Taz begins to give other cases. You take a look at the Taz and Sivkan Taz. They begin the Taz Sivkan Taz Vav. Visa ein iser im nafal borisha korin zayf ha'asu mechelev v'socha tavshel. Zayf is Yiddish for soap. So you have the soap, the detergent that's made from chelev. One of the ingredients is treif of fat. And if a little bit of that soap fell into food, you may not want to eat the food from a taste perspective, from a health perspective. But in terms of kashrus, the food is not treif. Even though the soap has treif ingredients, it's made with chalav, it's made with iser daraisa. Boris yeshbo efer kishaosno so mechalav. When you make soap out of the recipe to make soap out of chalav, also involves ashes. So it's a davar pagel.
Yes.
Correct. The OU does give hashkacha to certain detergents, and the OU did not seek that out. The manufacturers came to the OU and said they want to have hechsher. The OU explains to them there's no need for hechsher. Detergent doesn't have to be kosher. Even if it has treif ingredients, it's not an issue. But they wanted a hechsher because they figured it would be good for business. So the OU needed to develop some sort of standard that the detergent has to be in order to qualify for the hechsher. But part of the deal the OU made with the manufacturers, they said, we want to be very upfront. There is no need for this hashgacha. You want the hashgacha, we'll give you hashgacha, but there's really no need for it. And part of the agreement was that the OU publishes once annually, the OU publishes publicly that there's no need for hashgacha. And they do that in the Pesach edition of the Jewish Action. And they go through, for Pesach, was one section there they took over. The ingredients that have an OUP, that don't have an OUP, there's one section they list all the items that don't need hashgacha, not for Pesach, nor for all year round. So that's part of the OU's agreement with these manufacturers. There is no need, right? There is no need for the hashgacha, because it's absolutely a davar hapagum. It's absolutely a davar hapagum. Okay. The Shach is not happy, and the Taz is not happy.
So Nifsal is not where it's Mamish can be used at all, but even that, if you're somewhere else, still you can Shach Zale.
Right.
So the Shach points out in Sivka and Chafalef, he says, I find this very hard to believe. He says, Din Zalim Shum Posik. No one else ever says this. This is Shulchan Aruch came up with his own. Even the Beis Yosef, he didn't quote any source. He himself didn't quote any source. None of the Achronim mention it. Interesting. He doesn't mean we mean him by Achronim. He lived before most of them. He means the late Rishonim. Some of the Ran refer to, Ran was a Rishon who lived in the early 1300s. They refer to the Rishonim, the Achronim. And he says Rishonim, he means Rabbeinu Tam. Early, what we call early Rishonim. He says Achronim, he means what we call later Rishonim. The Shach says, I don't find early Rishonim, late Rishonim. No one says, Yagam Beis Yosef lo hizkiro. And then he says, Adrav Mashmi di Raposkim de Ein Shum Takana. He says, the Shach says that he thinks that the silence of the Poskim is deafening. And the silence of the Poskim indicates that this should not be the case. Because he says, there's a context in which they should have mentioned it. Tosfos wonders in a couple of places, how does Kasher and Kalim work? How does it work to Kasher Kalim? So the Psukim tell us in Parshat Tzav and in Parshat Matos. And so there are two ways in Parshas Matzah, the particular Torah talks about two ways to eliminate a pliya. One is through Liban, burn it out. And the other through Hagala, where if the Kili had only absorbed the flavor through wet heat, so you put it back into boiling water and that'll purge the Kili of the flavor. The primary difference, the fundamental difference between Liban and Hagala is that Liban is a destructive process. Hagala is a extractive process. Because Liban is Mechal B'Makomu, it just destroys it. Destroys the Bliya. When you do Hagala, you're not destroying the Bliya, but the idea is the Kebolo Kachpoto, the same way the flavor got absorbed into the pot wall through hot water, so now you can boil it in water again, and that water will draw it out. The problem is, Tosa says, what draws it out goes right back in. Maxwell's demon for the physicists. Is there some little microscopic policeman that's saying, oh, you just came out of the pipe, you can't go back in? Tosis does suggest that at one point, maybe a bleed can't go out and go back in the same same event. But they don't find that. What? Yeah, maybe.
Doesn't Hagala only work with an
Ainabin Yom? Oh. So that's why Balitosis say, so how does it work? How does it work? So the two classical solutions are either Eina Ben Yomo, which we'll get back to. Once it cleaves Eina Ben Yomo, the Bliya goes out into the water to come back in. That's already Eina Ben Yomo doesn't make trade for that point. We'll come back to that very soon because that's actually that logic is very central to what's going on here. The other solution that the Rishonim have is if it's a relatively small Kli, you need to kasher. So you can have a big pot, kashering pot, with 60 times as much water as the entire volume of the Kli. I have a knife, it needs to be kasher. What's the volume of the knife ready? You have a big kashering pot, big soup pot, full of boiling hot water, way more than 60 times as much water and pot as knife. So whatever bliya comes out becomes bottle. So then it's not gonna go anywhere. What's going back in? The readiness bottle. So those are the two classical solutions to that question of how does Hagala work. Why didn't we give a third answer? Says Shach. No, we don't find the Rishonim saying the third answer is spike the water. Spike the water with a Davar HaPogim. Spike the water with Afer. And then it goes back, goes out, and boom, it's gone. So that's the Shach's question. The fact that the...
isn't the reason why Eidav and Yom Mutter is...
Good. That's why we need to... That's we need to get to that. Now, yeah, we're going to come back. The Shulchan Aruch is based on the idea of Eidav and Yom. That's the whole notion of... Abiyam was one of the classic examples, knows the Talmud Tam. Now, so the Shach does raise the question that Rishonim didn't give this as a solution. Now, the question is, what is the Shulchan Aruch even saying?
Is the Shulchan Aruch saying
Lechatchila? Good. So, no, Shulchan Aruch might not be saying Lechatchila. He's saying if it fell in, so then you don't have to, nothing became trait.
What's important? Which
Gederos are we talking about? Good. Very good. Excellent. The Shulchan's language is interesting. He says, you already put in the, boiled it with, you boiled the pot with the Afer before it even, before the dirty plates even went in. So what's that about? So there were Achronim, and the Taz may be among them, who understood the Shulchan Aruch is saying a massive, radical, big chiddush. And this big chiddush is indeed very difficult to defend. There were those who understood What the Shulchan Aruch is saying is, once I cooked it once, I cooked the pot once with Eifer. So now the Eifer is just like food could be nivla into the pot walls. The Eifer is nivla into the pot walls, and now forever after, this pot is kosher because it was boleya Eifer. So any flavor that comes in is going to be no stam of kav. There were achron who understood that's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. Again, that it could be that Taz is reading that way also. And I said that I itach. That what? It's sort of like seasoning. You season your pot. You make it. You're poging your pot, and now it can never become trafe again.
So that, literally forever.
In other words, one way to read the Shulchan Aruch is. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I took this big cauldron and I boiled it up with ashes and water. Lie, you can put ashes in the water, it becomes a clean. It'll make a weak form of Drano, or liquid Drano. And then I emptied it. So some Acharon read the Shulchan Aruch is in, and then I emptied out the pot. And then at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I fill it up again with water, and I put in the fleshy dishes. And now it's impervious because I boiled it once with ashes. It's forever after impervious to tarfus.
So,
yeah, maybe even 6 weeks. Got to figure that out. But even if it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Acharon reject that. And the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch probably didn't mean that. What he probably did mean is the more modest version, which is Shach, the way the Shach read the Shulchan Aruch, that what he means is that not that you put the kodem doesn't mean I put in the ashes and then I emptied out the water, put in fresh water. Just I put the ashes in the water before I put the dirty pot. Say all one round of water, but I put in the ashes first and I put the dirty pots in. Second, Shulchan Aruch is saying that he's not saying that you can cook the ashes into the pot. So why is he saying the ashes have to be there first? So this brings us back to Nos Dam of Kav.
Anything that comes out of the flesh of the pot is
it's dafka not enough to have the ashes, and it's not enough to put in the ashes afterwards and bake the ashes and after the milchus. And why? Why? So let's go back to, we were talking a couple weeks ago, last week even, about Nosan Tamil, about Ein Ben Yom. So how does Ein Ben Yom work? So again, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, Ein Hei and Vav, that Min HaTorah, we paskin, and Machlokes in the Gemara, but we paskin, that Min HaTorah and Ein Ben Yom is zero. Because we paskin, if the flavor sits in the wall of the pot for 24 hours, a week ago, 2 days ago, I used this pan, my milchik pan, for an omelet with cheese, and that was the last time I used the pan. Last time I used the pan for milchiks was 2 days ago. So there is milchik, the cheese flavor sitting in the wall of the pan, but if it sits there for over 24 hours, it becomes pagum. And therefore what? So Min HaTorah, therefore, I really could treat the pan as parv. Midrabban Chazal said, no, you're not allowed to treat it as parv. You're not allowed to use it with fleshiks. This is Yisr Hishtamshus. Why? Because Gzerat Ein Ben Yom, Ata Ben Yom. If you tell you that things only stay par, only stay milchik or fleshik or trey for 24 hours, that's really asking for trouble. It's really asking for trouble, and people aren't going to keep cheshbon, and then it's going to chaos. So he said, no, Chazal said, once it became milchik, forever after it's milchik chachila, but not milchik b'diavad, meaning, forever after, even if it's ain't a banyom of milchik, I'm not allowed to use it with fleshiks. If I did, the food remains kosher, but I wasn't allowed to do that, and I'm going to have to kosher the pan. So what does that mean? Midrabanan, I'm not allowed to use the isher shabashos on the pan, and it's a maisa iser midrabanan to use that milchik pan, that old milchik pan with fleshiks. If I did use it with fleshiks, I violated iser rabanan after the tshuva, presumably, nesivus notwithstanding. But the food remains kosher. The fleshik food I made in the milchik pan remains kosher. So how do you understand that? What's the lumness of that? They made an iser on the pan, but not on the food. Why not say the food is also treif? Midrabanan. So the lumdus of it is the way Chazal said of the dinim. There's a difference. The pan has a tam pagum in it, and the food will later have a tam pagum. If I make salami and eggs in the milchik pan, so the pan has a tam pagum. And now Slami Eggs has a Tam Pagam of Milchus in it. So what's the chiluk? The panels are also to use, but the Slami Eggs, once I made them, are kosher to eat. So the difference is that the pan was Tchilas HaBliya L'Shvach. The food is Tchilas HaBliya L'Fkam. Right now, the flavor in the pan, the milk flavor pan, is puzzle. But it did start that way. When the milk flavor originally landed in the pan, it was great. It was l'shvach. It was fresh. Like 2 days ago, I made the delicious omelet, the Spanish omelet with cheese in the pan. And initially, the blia was great. 24 hours later, it went bad. So min haTorah it's mutter, but midrabanan Chazal forbade a tam pagum, which is tchilas ha'blia l'shvach. But they never forbade, even midrabanan, a tam pagum, which was pagum meikara. When the flavor landed in the pan, it was initially l'shvach. But 48 hours later, when that flavor then lands in the food, in the fleshik food, it was pagum meikara. It was pagum from the outset. So Chazal never forbade a tchilas ha'blia l'shvach. Midrabanan Chazal forbade a tchilas ha'blia l'shvach, which later becomes pagum. That seems to be the lumdus, the difference between the pan and the food that's made in the pan. The Eina B'Yomo Kli versus the food you make in the Eina B'Yomo Kli. So that's what's going on. That's what's going on here.
No. If I lent you money,
right. That's what's going on here. That's what this Gilead Marsha suggests in Osu Test. Shulchan Aruch is not saying that the Aether is Machshir, the pot. He's not saying because you boiled it with ashes now that you made the pot kosher, unless you did a full proper Haggalah. He's not saying just because you're Mavliya some Aether into the pot now becomes kosher. No. But we are saying that if the ashes, and that comes back to Glenn's point, if the ashes are in the water before the fleshik grease gets in the water, so then the bulia of the fleshiks into the milchik pot is tchilas habliya lufka. Because from the moment that the fleshik grease lands in the water, it's immediately pagum. It enters the milchik pot wall together with the ashes. So it's tchilas habliya lufka. So it's unlike in a Bayomo situation. It's the pot is equivalent to the food made in the Eina B'Yomo Kli, because the tam was already pogum before it entered. It's like the salami and eggs. The tam was pogum before it ever entered salami and eggs. The tam here is pogum before it ever enters the kli, because it only arrives together with ashes. That's why, as Glenn pointed out, it's critical. Highlights, you put the ashes in the Yorah Kodim Shinyuchag Deir's Bezocha. If not, if the ashes only went in afterwards, so yeah, it's continuing to bubble and boil, you continue to have an ongoing feeding in of blia into the pot, but the blia already landed, the fleshik blia already landed in the Milcha Kli, L'Shvach. Subsequently, the ash shows up, it's too late. That's Tchilas HaBliya L'Shvach. That's also
Tchilas. Order in first before the. It's a matter of the order of
water. Water and ashes, and then subsequently flesh and grease. The ashes have to be there before the flesh. If there's no water, nothing's happened. The water is a medium.
No, but then doesn't
right, so what does cut mean more than just Habel Mos, Mashal Bil? Here's $100.
You want me to have it all back. So I tell you can have it all back. So I got to give you
right, but the Shulchan Aruch is assuming that itself is not a problem. And that goes back to Ziv Gimel. That's a nap or not. The fact that the milking flavor comes into the water, that's nap or not. He said he doesn't possibly come in a burrow. But we have to think about how about the milchik grease. Is the milchik grease, that's his issue. The milchik grease won't be an issue if there are ashes, and specifically the ashes got there first.
You're assuming if it was a dirty pot, then you would have put the apron first, then the water,
If it was a dirty pot, yes, correct. I'll have to put in the ashes before I turn on the fire. I kept the water, the ashes, cold water and ashes. But correct. And that's what the Chazon Ish writes here. The Chazon Ish wrote on Kol Tarkula Kamat, all of Halacha, certainly. Almost everything. He doesn't talk about Hilchos Yom Kippur. A few things he doesn't talk about, but by and large, you look at the just the names, the titles on the spines of the classic seven volume set of Chazon Ish. It's Arachayim, Yerdeya, Arachayim Oed, Yerdeya, Evan Ezra Nashim, Chosh Mishpat Nezikin, Zerayim, Kachim, Taras.
Whatever
you covers it all. So he, and he often goes Al Seder. So in Yeri, open Yeri day, he goes Al Seder. Shita, Trevis, and he goes through Bas Mechalov. So at the beginning of a Siman Chav Gimel, in Chazon Ish Yeri day, that's where he gets up to our topic. So he writes this as well. And that's where Shechter, I've heard several times, and we just talked about it again recently. This idea that the Chitchil Sebli Elfgam is the logic for the Shulchan Aruch. Now, so lemasa halacha lemasa. So what does this mean? So number one, halacha lemasa. The shach point that we usually don't do this, but sometimes letzorech we will use it. So our shach told me this happened many years ago. OU was giving hashkacha on a dinner that was taking place at a facility in Washington, D.C. And a few hours earlier, a firm organization that was running a dinner in D.C. And earlier that day, Boy Scouts of America were having their event in the same facility. And there was not a, you didn't have a 24-hour break in between. So how are you going to kosher the kitchen in between? You don't have. Usually, you use any binyomo. You could principally use shishim, but that's usually not practical. For most things, you could use practical for a spoon. It's not practical for a sink. So apparently, initially they wanted to see if Boy Scouts would be willing to. They would have for free given hashkacha on the Boy Scout dinner. Boy Scouts were interested in hashkacha, but they would have agreed to it. So then that would have be machsher both events, and then it's not a problem. And then do kasher the day before. Apparently, Boy Scouts are not interested because kosher cuts of meat don't look classy in a non-kosher environment because the meat is small. Because when you trebring out the chayil, if you trebring out the gidanasha, you end up cutting everything on your, and you do malicha, you end up cutting up the meat to much smaller pieces. And in a non-kosher setting, small pieces of meat are not mechubad. You want it to have the full loin, whatever it is. So the Boy Scouts were not, they had a conversation about it, but they were not, there was no way to do have their affair kosher in a way that would meet their aesthetic standards. So what they did is that they koshered him during the few hours in between the two events. They koshered the entire kitchen using water mixed with detergent. More works than a davar pogim. I'm not sure what davar pogim they used. They used a davar pogim to solve their problem. We mentioned earlier. So the shach is unhappy about it, but lemaisa we do it. Leisat tzarich, we will rely on shulchan aruch. Shulchan aruch assumes that okay, that's not the examples of Baitosis gave. They gave two examples. That could be other examples also.
No, but I thought even for the shulchan we were saying it has to be nesinas tam lefgam.
Right. No. So when you kasher, in other words, how do I kasher? I want to kasher trade for sick. So I'm going to pour boiling hot water all over the sink. Right? Or I have a big pot of
pagash.
So if I have to...
The opponent's going back in.
Right, going back in. But if it goes back in, but it's right, at that point, the second time it goes in with Tchil Sabli Lufkam, it's the same as Dain Banyomo. Wait for Dain Banyomo, the Bli comes out, goes right back in. So what changed? And that's why that Dain Banyomo is key. What changed? Tosis does say Dain Banyomo works. Why is that any better? It's the same Bli. It was here 5 minutes ago. But because it went into the water, bounced back, now it's mutter. Mahapshat. The answer is, yeah. Because when it was here last time, it had yichas. It had originally entered this pot 2 days ago as a bli l'shrach. It goes out into the water, comes back in. But this time, when it comes back in, it's coming in already pogum. So it's not just now pogum, but historically pogum. The first time around, it was historically not pogum, it was historically l'shrach. So that does not make a difference at the level of Taraisa, but it does make a difference at the level of Drabana. And this also now brings us to dishwashers. Now we're prepared to talk about dishwashers a little bit. And then Glenn's Kodem is the key, one of the pivotal questions. It's sometimes hard to get a handle on the Matzias. So let's say you accidentally... You ran the dishwasher with the wrong thing, or even you had milk and flakes together. A pretty severe accident. So what you really need to figure out, different dishwashers are different. Last time, Sam was talking about where the water gets heated. Another difference between different dishwashers is how quickly the detergent comes out. There are some dishwashers, some models where the detergent is out immediately. And the other other models where the detergent only comes out, maybe an initial rinse, and then the detergent comes out later. That's going to make a big difference. That's going to make a very big difference. If the detergent's there right away, so then you can, everything was lufkam, no problem. You shouldn't have done it, but the evid, everything's kosher, nothing's kosher. If not, then not. Or even to give a scenario where it's a lot easier to get a handle on the tzias, at least in principle, is when you're washing dishes in the sink. So, a key question, well, one of the, we talked last time, or the key questions that you asked, Hanhagas initial, this or that, are the key questions you ask when you do an intake on a bus b'chalvshal. So when you're trying to figure out, one last time, you're trying to figure out Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni, trying to figure out Ben Yom and Ben Yom, and Dafke Ben Yom of a Kli Rishon, or of an Iri Kli Rishon, not Ben Yom and Kli Sheni. Another question you want to ask often in a dishwashing situation is, was everything, how much, when did the detergent hit the scene? Was the sponge, if your sponge is saturated with detergent, so that could be halachically very helpful. Because it means the moment the sponge touched things, they were immediately coated with. Let's say I used a milchik sponge on the fleishik knives and pot, the fleishik knives and forks, whatever. So a key question is: are your sponges pre-saturated or not?
How would the sponge be a clear region or an iri region?
Good question. The answer is, a lot of times, another question you can ask is, what was your sponge look like, cleanliness-wise? But oftentimes, sponges will have bits of food on them.
But
how would
the time...
Ah, because if I have a milchik sponge with bits of...
So it's cold water is going
on. Yeah. I'm holding it under the water.
You're using boiling hot, or very hot water.
Yeah, so that's
not
water.
Not a problem for our wives. Not a problem for us.
It's a problem for me.
Oh, you want to know what you're talking about? Yeah, so that is your hands.
Yeah, and it's how are you washing
So let's come back to that in a moment. That's a good question. Let's hold off on that for a moment. Let's finish this thought. So if you have a sponge with food particles on it, and you have the other side, you have your pot that's also dirty with the opposite type of food, and you have iri kli rishon on the two pieces of food, so you could be in serious trouble. If there's soap there, may rosh, so then that's this. We certainly would saw it. Certainly be the evid. We're relying on Shulchan Aruch. If it was kodim, if the soap is there meirosh, so then it was chilas abilu lufkam. But if the soap only got added later, so then you're going to have to ask many more questions to figure out if indeed this is mutter or not. But the question Yasla Esbo, and then I'll tell Yasla Esbo a little bit. We haven't spoken Yasla Esbo in a while. Is it pot? You're saying, how you thought? How is it possible? I'm washing the dishes with my hands. So obviously not just well, because I don't have my hands there. So the answer is like this. Two levels. There's a machlokes achronim, and machlokes achronim hilchos Shabbos, and hilchos bas b'chol, and there's machlokes rishonim in Iyov, which I think are linked. The range of what the contemporary poskim who try to give a number to what Yatzal Esbo is, what how many degrees Fahrenheit, Celsius, what have you, the range is incredible. The range is a good 50, 60 degrees Fahrenheit between the lower and upper bounds of what Yatzal Esbo looks like. The lowest shear, I think, is Rav Shama Zalman Orbach, was Choshe Shri Yatzal Esbo as low as 113 degrees. Not sure. You can take a look. That was based on the Shech. The Gemara is a suffix in the first parak of Chulin, where the Beis HaShchita Roseach, the Beis HaShchita Tzonin. And in terms of, you worry about Belias between the knife and the animal, the bird. So we pask in tzonin. It's under Yatzal Esbo. So I believe it's Rishon Zalman who said, but look, clearly it's close. Otherwise, there's no Shiloh. So they tested they investigated the temperature of the Beis HaShechita of different animals and birds immediately after Shechita. The highest, I think, was a duck or a goose, and it came in at 113 degrees. So he said, so clearly 113 degrees is not Yahshua as well. Maybe 114 is. It's close. And the OU assumed that and I think Rabbi Shach and Rebelsky both assumed it's not going to be 1 degree off. But 120, they're already choshesh is Yahshua as well. That number is significant because chocolate scorches in the 120s. So if your shir yasazbo was 130, then making kosher chocolate would be far simpler. Because if your shir yasazbo was 130, then chocolate making is a tzonin process. Because we're choshesh for yasazbo being 120, so chocolate making is sometimes a cham process, and then you have to think about kashering. Kashering has to be complicated because you don't want any water on the equipment. So even the tiniest bit of water in a chocolate mix could ruin the whole batch. Then other posts, I think the Rav assumes it's between 140 and 160. And then Lechumra, I think the Tzel and the Rav assumes it's close to 180. And 170, 175. In terms of, and so it could be a Chumra in both directions. A low Yatzel Esbo is a Chumra in the sense that you're already concerned with Blia at a lower temperature and you're concerned with Bishol. Yeah, on Shabbos, on low temperature. A higher shear of Yatzel Esbo is a chumra in the sense of, and also if you want for Yain Mevushal, if you want to ensure that the grape juice and the wine is Mevushal, so you have to raise it above Yatzel Esbo. What's Yatzel Esbo? So Kedem, things under the Ashgacha of the OU and Etzel Merav, and the Nafkamina is that Etzel Merav is a very, very high number for Mevushal, so they Mevashal at a pretty high temperature. So it's remarkable that there's such a span. It's close to 60 degrees Fahrenheit. 60 degrees Fahrenheit is a third of the way from freezing to boiling. A third of all temperatures at which water is liquid are mutal b'machlokas, whether hot or cold. So I will point that. He points out his piece on this in Mordechai. It seems so bizarre that she be such a vast machlokas. So he suggests that it has to do with that at the root of it is the suffix over how you define Yatzel Esbo. The Yatzel Esbo means that you'll be surprised and pull your hand away, or that you can't keep your hand in it. In other words, if I wasn't expecting it to be hot, I'll pull my hand away at a much lower temperature. If I know it's hot, I'll pull my hand away at a much higher temperature.
Isn't the criteria of baby stomach?
The Gemara says the equivalent of Yatzel Esbo is it would burn a baby stomach. Kreso shel tinok ben yom nechves bo. So that obviously for obvious reasons we would never want to experiment with that. We will experiment Yatzel Esbo. They'll try to put your hand in. An adult will choose to put his hand in and see what happens. So that's right. I will point out that they really have two very different definitions of understanding what Yatzel Esbo means, and that's why there's such a vast, it's just understandable to be such a vast range. I don't remember if I really point this out or not, but the word Rashi points out that the word soledes is that shoresh is found in Iov, asalda mipanecha. If you look, I don't remember if I really point this out or not, but if you look in the Rishonim on that pasuk in Iov, I believe there is a machlokas, maybe it's Radak and Ibn Ezra. They seem to be debating that question of whether asalda means out of shock or that I'm not able to withstand. So that may be, I don't know if we have indications, neither Ibn Ezra nor Radak, neither produce halachic writings of that we're really familiar with. So it would be fascinating if we could figure out the machlokas l'shitasam on Yatzel Esbo. So Lamasa, now coming back, there is a vast range in terms of what Yatzel Esbo looks like. And as specific as Rabbi Willard points out, many assume it means that you would pull your hand away instinctively if you were surprised. But if you know it's hot, then then you can withstand it. That's why we're concerned with Yatzel Esbo at dishwashing, because the water may be well over 120 degrees. If it was 180 degrees, I could not keep my hands in, and it would get severe burn. 120 degrees, That's like, that could be comfortable for many people.
You can send boilers nowadays for 140 degrees.
Right, right.
And you, it's really very difficult. Even if you know, right, and even if it's gradual, it still gets to the point where you can.
Right, but 120, some people are comfortable with. Some people not. To be able to different.
Most people's grandmothers are comfortable with that.
Exactly. So I will point that also when he gets here from Bishop Shabbos. It talks about the older Russian women drink tea at a temperature that most of us would not be able to withstand, and they drink it like it's, you know, no big deal.
My father-in-law used to drink tea. I couldn't even hold a cup.
And he drank it. Okay, there you go. So different people, different tolerances, which also, and that's a question in Shiurim in general. That's sort of beyond our scope right now. It's a question in terms of Shiurim in general. How are you? Most Shiurim have to do with Adam Beinoni. That's what the Mishnah is saying in the 17th parak of Kalim. Usually we look at Hilchos Yom Kippur. There's an exception that Melo Lugmav is per person. Melo Lugmav is subjective. But usually there's an objective standard on the Beinoni. So you have to figure out what Yatzal Ezba looks like. Okay. So these are some of the. So the washing dishes is an incredibly rich case in that it brings together so many different strands, so many different principles within the umbrella of Atam Ki Ikrim Bas B'Chalav, and it gives us also a sense, not only brings together so many strands, but also gives a sense of how we would practically deal with the Shaila. And it often is going to be a flow chart. And you're going to see, maybe it's more because it's anybody knows, maybe it's more because it's cliché. Maybe it's more because there was detergent early enough. Okay, if not, now we have to get to the more difficult things like, is there a bit of Bashishim, and so on and so forth. That's usually the way you're going to think through a case. Yeah.
The Shilas in terms of the dishwasher, is that taking into account that it's let's say you wait 24 hours between washing milchik dishes and fleshik dishes, if everything's in a benyoma,
if the dishwasher is in a benyoma, that could be helpful. Then I'm not worried about the bleus of the dishwasher. Let's say I use the dishwasher of fleshik, so the racks have fleshik bleus. So I'm not worried about the fleshik bleus trafing up the milchik dish that I put accidentally because anybody know it. Yes, however, that alone would not solve my problems fully in two senses. Number one, when you have a benyomo clear, we'll get this more in 7 Tzadik Dal, a benyomo and an ein benyomo interacting, the benyomo is fine, but the ein benyomo now is problematic because you're just bolea from the benyomo of the opposite type. So practically speaking, I have a fleshik dishwasher I haven't used in 24 hours, and then I run it with milchik stuff. So the fact that it's ein benyomo means my milchik dishes are fine, but my fleshik dishwasher would just bolei a milchiks. So that's not a great place to be.
Unless
number
the
one,
soap started.
Right. So that's why the soap is relevant. The other point to think about in terms of dishwashers is also ein benyomo may not always help you, because again, this is a question of different models. The question is, what happens to how does the dishwasher deal with food particles? Where do the food particles go, and are there filters that are holding some of the food? Are there sometimes food particles that get stuck within in a filter that's right below the cavity? So that's, again, you have to look at your. So without detergent, misusing dishwashers could be very, very. If you need to, you got to deal with it. There are a lot of once you're not coated with the detergent right away, it becomes very challenging to deal with. And there are a lot of materials you got to really talk. You really have to. At that point, you have to talk to an authorized repairman to get more information on how your dishwasher works and figure it out. Or, you really need a dissected view of your dishwasher to really see where the food particles go and where the water coming, where the detergent coming from, and really figure out. The Yesodos are here in Siv Gimel Siv Dalet, the application. Again, it's a lot easier to see what's going on in your sink. When it's in your dishwasher, the black box of the dishwasher, there are a lot of practical details that as we see, have significant impact on the halacha.
How does the food particles play into it?
Well, if
this goes in, let's say it goes into the bottom and like a little filter, it just stays there.
Right. So if let's say you don't have detergent right away, so you
water's cooking the food particles.
Right, we're cooking the food particles, and they may even have to figure out, are they coming back up or not? And also, is the water rising up temporarily? At some point, is there a rise of water, or the water is always draining and nothing's ever coming back?
Okay.
So you have to figure out what's going on. And plus, as we learned in Siman Tzadi Gimel, that if you have a closed cavity that's full of very hot water, so that's going to be full of thick vapor, which itself may be a problem, if the water is not bouncing back, but it's full of vapor.
Right,
so you have to, here it's not a cleavage, you have to figure out, is that a problem? Not a problem, but it's certainly, you have to make a lot of cheshbonos. Let's spend I want to spend a couple minutes on the closing si'ifim of Siman Tzadi Hei. The closing of si'ifim of Siman Tzadi Hei really have nothing to do with Na Bar Na. The reason why they're here really is because this is organized al Seder HaGemara. So Siman Tzadi Hei was drawing from the sugi in the bottom of Kufi Alfam Beis. It happens that that's going to feed right into what becomes Siman Tzadi Vav, which is the questions of Davar Charif and knives. And then right after that, the Gemara starts talking about questions of how you store food in ways that will avoid, how to store food in a way that will avoid any bus b'chol problems. So because it's right here, right after this Gemara, so the Tur and Shulchan Aruch put it at the end of Siman Tzadi Hei. Let's go back to the Gemara, and then we'll come back to Shulchan Aruch. Gemara says that the fourth line on the top of Kufi Beis Amud Aleph. Ba'amenei Rav Dimi Rav Nachman. Rav Dimi asked Rav Nachman a shayla. Interesting, you don't often see, I don't think, I think it's rare to see Rav Dimi Rav Nachman interacting. Rav Dimi asked Rav Nachman a shayla. Ma'u la'anuchi kada de milcha gabe kada de kamcha. What's the din? Is it permissible to put a container of salt next to a container of kamcha? Kamcha is Aramaic for kutach. Another connection to the previous sugya. Talking before about the milchik sauce that you're allowed to put on Dagu Shalab Kaira. So I have my jar of kutach, of kamcha, on the shelf. Can I put a jar of salt right next to it? Amar Leh, Rav Nachman says, no, sir, it's a problem. Dechalamai. How about if it's not a container of salt, but a container of vinegar? I'm like, shari. So that's fine. So Maishna, Rav Dimi says, I don't understand. Rav Nachman, what's the difference? So he says, L'chisecha ala kur de milcha. When you eat a lot of salt, then you understand. Not eat a lot of salt. So Rashi explains, eating a lot of salt is just poisonous. That's not really helpful anyway. So he says, no. Rashi says, we mean the other shorish involves a chaf and a lamin. It means to measure. You do me a favor, measure a kur of salt for me, and then I'll tell you the din. Some of the mefarshim talk about the value of that line, that agada line within this halachic context, speaks to the fact that when you're invested in your learning, when you worked hard to learn, you're koni your learning much more. If everything came easy and I didn't have to work hard to make it happen, or sometimes it's more likely to be in one ear, out the other ear. But when I paid a price for it, maybe in this case, he measured the salt, spent time measuring salt for Nachman, or I had to stand in my head to figure out how I'm going to have time at night to do homework with the kids and also come to Beis Meresh to learn. The learning that comes through commitment and sacrifice lasts much more. You work for it, and then I'll give you the pshat. So what does he tell him? My time, hi ise isura be'ene, hi leise isura be'ene. In this case, the isra is ben. In that case, the isra is not ben. What on earth does that mean? Ben means it's actually that there's a visible residue. So what does this mean? So Rashi explains that the concern, well, what's the concern b'chlal, and what's the hezbra, the differentiation? So Rashi explains that the concern is, I'm worried, should I be worried about splatter? I have a container of salt and a container of milchik sauce. The salt on which we as part, we use the salt on milchik food, we use the salt on fleshik food. So do I have to be concerned about storing a part of a food next to a milchik food? Maybe the milchiks will splatter. So he said, we're worried about splattering to the salt, but not into the vinegar. Why? So Rashi explains, because if any kutach splatters into the vinegar, So it's not gonna be visible. It's gonna dissolve into the vinegar and it'll be batel. But if the kutach splatters on the salt, so that's not batel because that remains be'en. It's gonna be visible on top. It's near of a nikar, pneshu av, lo batel. The salt isn't liquid, the salt is solid chunks. The kutach is just gonna sit on top of it. Meaning I won't notice it. It's going to blend in. It'll be camouflaged. White milchik sauce on top of the white salt. I may not notice it. I'm going to rush. I'm just going to take a spoonful of salt and put it wherever, not even noticing that there's some milchik granules mixed in with the salt. But if I were to look carefully, it's there. In other words, betel only begins once it's a tarovis. And the definition of a tarovis is a miyat, miyat iser rov hatzer ve'ena iser nikar v'mekomo. The definition of tarovis is that you don't see it. It's all blended together. If it's not blended together, I happen to not notice it. That's not a tarovis. It's for the same reason that I don't say, what's the concern of bugs in the lettuce? Aphids. What's the percentage of in a serving of lettuce? What percentage of by weight, by volume, whoever you want? Usually we look at volume in terms of betel. What's the percentage of the lettuce that's aphids? Minimal. Wait. But since she batel b'shishim, the volume of aphids is maybe 0.1%, 0.01% to less.
Isn't it? The bria is not the bottle of
Good. And
it's not a tarovis.
It might not even be a tarovis. It might not even be a tarovis. Perhaps. Now there, but you might make the argument, no, it is a tarovis because it's really, if you look at it, you don't even see it. But here, it really is. It's sitting on top. It's sitting on top. It's mamish there. I just wasn't paying attention. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in Sif Hei, quotes the din, Eim aneichim kli sheish b'kutach, it's a kli sheish b'melech. Can't, ba'amutal anicho, it's a kli sheish b'chometz. That's the Gemara, straightforward. That's where Rav Nachman told Rav Dimi. And the Shach and Sivkan Chabez quotes the Gemara. B'melech hakutach nofel alav. It's bad. It's not batel. And we worry maybe in Yumlach Bovasar. But by the Chometz, it's the batel b'shisha. Shai. And then the Ramah points out, so you might be thinking, one second, so what does my refrigerator look like? A vault. I have containers of milk, containers of flesh, containers of power.
So the
Ramah says, but dafkan kelim magulim. It's only if you have open containers next to each other, then you worry about splatter. Then you worry about splatter. But if everything is covered, then obviously there's no concern, or so it seems. Obviously there's no concern. Afilu hachi, Ramah says, number one, if the kelim are covered, mutal chatchila. There's no concern with having containers of milk and flesh in your Tupperwares in your or jars with lids in your refrigerator, that's not a problem. And then the Ramah goes on to say, furthermore, not only is the mutal chatchila to have closed jars, you're not mechayev to have a new chumrah, a milchik refrigerator, say a feather refrigerator. No, not mechayev, because of that line in the Ramah. And then he says, in Avar, even though we're talking about open kelim, that's when it is aser, Avar nasan biyachan mutal chashin shem nafal melach. It's wrong to have open containers next to each other in a way where you worry about splatter and the splatter won't be obvious, but also won't be batel. But lamasa, if you did, it's also chatchila, but it's mutter b'dievet. We don't assume that it probably happened. We said you shouldn't do it because maybe it'll happen. But if you already put them next to each other, you don't have to assume that it did happen.
By tumah, we have a klal that what's it called that a kli is kolel. So you have one thing that's tumah at one side of a trough, let's say, and you have something on the other side. So if we say the whole thing becomes one is tumah, one is tar, the whole thing becomes tar because the trough actually encompasses everything. If we say that same thing.
That's because the water, the tar water.
No, not water, not on the liquid. I feel even at the, like, I think it's a Mishnah in Maisa Shani. That if you have Tamei Truma in a trough.
Right.
And on one side, not touching each other. And then the Tar Truma on the other end of the trough.
Yeah.
Not touching. The Tamei Truma, the Tar Truma becomes Tamei. Because we say that the trough, that the kli is
Metzarf them.
Metzarf.
Interesting.
So is it, I would say, would you extrapolate that out? In, let's say in a refrigerator, if you have milchiks and fleishiks, would the refrigerator be considered like a kli?
With respect to what?
The two of them sitting, let's say, for a certain period of time together.
Ah, so let's take a look at Tosis. Tosis, do you want to mahu on this Gemara? Could you be someone else? So Tosis says, the Gemara said, you know, I'll put the kad of the milcha next to the kad of the kamcha. But ain't less sir mitam zeh laniach b'teva achas kad shal basar, is a kad shal chal. Rav Dimi was asked Rav Nachman about the milchiks next to parav. How about milchiks next to fleishiks? So he says, that's actually mutter. The hasab nizr yafa. There, you're much more careful. Because you know, milk and flesh, this is a dangerous situation. But I'm not as concerned, because I have that wire of milk and flesh. Nothing's becoming treif. But exactly because the risk is less, exactly because the stakes, rather, are lower, the risk is greater. Oh, I'm sorry. No pun intended there. And because the stakes are lower, let's see if giving you a synonym that's punless, because I always continue to use it punlessly, because the stakes are lower, because I'm not worried about Korean Basa B'chalav, my antenna aren't up. And as a result, it's more likely that I will not be paying attention. Okay. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch goes on to quote in Sivav. Mutter litim besoch teva kad shal basar etzel kad shal chal. Not a problem. And the Shach, Zivkan Chal Gimel, then called Tosis. Mizu Zahiri, he explains why this is, if you don't have a Gemara and Tosis in front of you, he injects that here. And then the Ramah says, there are those who are machmir, Ishmachmir lechatchila, Tosis gave a Svara, okay, so one could potentially disagree with the Svara, so Shach tells you, go look at Hagos Ashri, he talks about this, okay.
And then the Yesh Machmirin is presumably when they're open.
Yeah, that's what the Shach stresses. In Chavdal, Davke b'Megulim, Kemo b'Sefei, Hachi is about Hagos Ashri b'Hedya, Hagos Ashri is a source for that Chum. Hagos Ashri is the one who disagrees with the Tosis and says, I don't find the Mizr Zahiri Svara so compelling. But yeah, we're only talking about Megulim. If it's covered, there's nothing wrong. Nothing wrong, or is there? See, it's actually interesting. We don't paskin like the Rambam. Rambam does not make page Shulchan Aruch here, interestingly enough. You know, usually Shulchan Aruch prefers Rambam. It's just worth knowing the Rambam, and it's already in Rabbeinu Hananel, has an entirely different understanding of this din. The Rambam writes in the end, the Perek Tes of Machol Sazor is the Perek about Bas Vachov. Near the very end, it's Halacha Chafei. Ei manichin kad shal melech betzad kad shal kamach. Why? Mepnei sheshoev mimenu. V'nimtza mevash la'abas v'melech zeh sheyesh bo tamachov. It's absorption through the walls of the containers. But meniach kad ha'chometz besad kad ha'kamach she'en ha'chometz sho'ev mimenu. It's not for the Rambam about, you'll notice it'll become batel in the vinegar. No, it's a chemical issue. The salt, this is like melicha. The salt is drawing the flavor through the walls. And the Ravid says, Girsa Acheres Yesh Etzleinu. That's not what it says in my Gemara. You look in the Rif, that's not what it says in the Rif's Gemara. Rif, like the Ravid, like Rashi and Tosis, the Girsa we have in front of us. But Rabbeinu Hananel does have a different Girsa. The Rambam clearly would not be helped by closed containers. The lid does lamav lamorid. The concerns that the containers are touching. So the Gra and Sivkat and Chav Zayin. No, I'm sorry. Leave aside the Gra. The Ra, you look in the back of the Ra on the Rif. Points out Rabbeinu Hananel, the Girsa of the Rambam. And the Radvaz on the side of the Rambam says even the Rambam only was talking about the most porous type of material, cheres. It's only a cheres issue. That was the Rambam's approach, which we do not accept. And finally, we close with the last sif in Siman Sadehei. With this, we're Messiah and Siman Sadehei and Messiah to next Chabura. Melech Hanosin Bekairish Al Basar Mutar Litno Bechalav. You have salt that was sitting in a clean fleshik plate, a clean fleshik pot, a clean fleshik container. You're allowed to use that salt for milchiks. So why is that? So the Rama says, why is that? So the Shach right away says, well, sounds like we all learn in Siman Sadehei, it's a naparat. The salt is it's the same as the spaghetti that you cooked in the fleshy pot. So the Shach says, no, salt is davar charif. When you deal with davar charif, naparat is not going to be a solution. We'll get to that more in the next Siman, davar charif. You cut your onions with a clean fleshik knife, the onions became fleshik. Why? It's a davar, no, davar charif undoes the kula of naparat. The Shach assumes that salt is davar charif. That's not universally accepted. So why is it that this is not problematic? So the answer is, and the Gra sends you to look at Tosas and Kufi Gimel, which is where all this comes from. It's this Tosas, Tadir Maslo Tahar. Melech Bekairah, Mishnamish Mabasar, Lochi Men, Alas is Men of Bechalav. Hamachu Tavav Bracha. Nice to be Machmir, Nikar Diz Mutter. Why? As Tosas explains, that's because there's no, it takes us back to the very core of issues of Tam. You only get started once there's some force that's driving the Blia. So if you have heat is the most common driver of Blia. Or 24-hour soak, Kavish Kimavushal. Or the combination, and we'll get to in Siman Sarivav, of a davar charif and duchad de sakina, the pressure and the sharp food. Or moliach kirosech. In Siman Sarivav, we had the din that if you salt things together, so that can cause a transfer of flavor, even though everything is cold. But that's only if there's some...
that would be by a what's it called, like meat and...
So number one, that might only be when you have some fluid, not dry salt. More to the point, the Gemara says, here in Kufi Gimel, that's a one-directional thing. It's the salty item exudes its flavor out. So if they're both salty, then they share their flavors with each other. But if one is salty and one's bland, the salty gives its flavor to the bland, but not vice versa. So you have salt. So salt is salty. The kli is not salty. Even though it has salt sitting on top of it.
But
the kli itself.
Is from the
no, so the kli doesn't give its flavor to the salt. If the salt had flavor, it would give its flavor to the kli. But the salt is just salt. Salt is plain salt. Salt is parv. And there's no there's no method of tam transfer. There's no force driving the flavor from the fleshik plate into the salt. So the salt remains parv. If you heated it, if you took that fleshik plate of salt on and you put it in there in a microwave, for some reason or another, you want to have warm salt. So then, already, okay. So then the salt perhaps becomes a fleshik. But because man, that's cold, there is no method of tam transfer. Everything remains fine. Everything remains fine. That's a great way to end Siman Sadehei. Siman Sadehei, which we'll pick up with the next time, Yirtzeh Hashem, is where everything is not necessarily fine. Siman Sadehei is where you, what do you do when you made a mistake? What do you do when you stuck the milchik kli into the fleshik food? You stuck the fleshik kli into the milchik food using the wrong kli. That is the overall topic of Siman Sadehei. I have a lot of opportunities to apply the principles of Eidei Ben Yomo, and so on and so forth, and Ben Yomo, Eidei Ben Yomo, Bittul Pashishim, in very, very practical ways. Here are Ma'ar Makomos number 17, which take us through the first four Se'ifim of Siman Sadehei. This will likely take us for more than a week.